Like to go a little non-linear now after a morning of discussions of linear things, and also to address a little bit the required morning's dis of optically selected quasar samples. And basically what Martin and I have been doing is we've been looking at clusters in the two-mass sample, and that picture is the distribution of two-mass galaxies on the whole sky. And our main interest is actually something more associated with nonlinear behavior and the halo model for large-scale structure, where one of the key things you want to know is how many galaxies are there in a halo of a given mass. And what we're going to do is we're going to look for clusters in the two-mass sample and then determine this distribution of galaxies in this thing. This is just one of a number of applications of these, one of which was just discussed before, getting sigma 8 and omega. If you look at it versus redshift, you could try to get W, and then our main focus is on this, what's called the halo occupancy function. And of course, there are four ways of finding these things. The old one is optical surveys, and in fact, it's somewhat surprising that almost all of the clusters derived from optical surveys still come from photographic plates taken in the 1950s, or maybe a little bit later, simply because there have been no modern all-sky digital surveys until you had two-mass or SDSS. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why the optical catalogs are somewhat ratty, is because the data has not been updated for quite an extensive period. There are the large-scale X-ray surveys. This still mainly comes from Einstein and Rosatz because funding for future X-ray survey missions has been put on indefinite hold. And of course, people have been talking about two new methods which will start to generate large samples, either blind weak lensing surveys or the SZ surveys. Each, I guarantee you, will have their own set of idiosyncratic systematics. So we're going to work in the two-mass sample. And this two-mass is quite shallow, but it's all sky. So basically, we're going to look for clusters in a sample of 98,000 galaxies over the whole sky down to 5 degrees above the galactic plane. The average redshift is about 0.05, and if you sort of work it out, the total volume in this is about equal to the SDSS redshift survey volume, a little bit less. And we're going to include the redshift information, but it's only partial redshift information. We have redshifts of 90% of the galaxies brighter than 11.25, and a third for the fainter magnitude, and about half of the redshifts overall. So there are about 50,000 redshifts used in the analysis. And I'm not going to tell you anything about how we do this. I'll just show you some results. Basically, what we get for each cluster is a likelihood that it is a cluster. And I'll show you some examples. The number of member galaxies in that cluster, a velocity dispersion estimate. And then what we do is we cross-match to other properties. And we're going to do this both against n-body simulations, so we can cross-match to the recovered clusters versus the actual input mass, and against X-ray properties for the real surveys. Now, one big problem when you get into this is you have to define what on earth you mean by the number of galaxies in a cluster, because clusters don't have edges and neither do galaxy luminosity functions. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to set up a number that's easily compared to standard theoretical things. And so we try to match to the virial radius. If the virial radius is defined by a mass over density of 200 times the critical radius, for a bias of unity, that corresponds to an overdensity in the number of galaxies of omega, of 200 over omega, which happens to be the overdensity of the beast. And so basically, we try to count the number of galaxies inside this density shell, which would correspond to a standard delta 200 mass virial radius. And then we normalize the number of galaxies by the number that are brighter than L star. And an important thing to keep in mind is you have to watch this definition, because if you change this even slightly, you can get a totally different relationship for the number of galaxies in a cluster. And so one other one that people traditionally have used is you simply count the galaxies inside a round aperture. And that actually leads to a different slope. It goes about the 3/4 power of our richness. And that, in fact, is a big enough change to be physically interesting. All right. Martin says he can never find clusters. Martin, you see the cluster in this one? Here's the first cluster. It has a likelihood of being a real cluster of 513. And it's the Perseus cluster. It has an equivalent number of L star galaxies of 12, and it's reasonably close, and it's a 6 keV cluster. Cluster number two is another oldie but goodie. COMA is a little bit further away, so it actually has slightly lower richness. It contains more galaxies, but is slightly less detectable than Perseus. Then comes Hydra, cluster number 8, 21, 256, and 539, 1,165, which is the Higson compact group. And this is about the limit of where you can start believing it. Basically, at this point, you start getting a significant false positive rate, whereas for those brighter ones, obviously, the false positive rate is zero. Okay, so the first thing all people always complain about optical samples is, of course, completeness and false positive rates. And we've looked at this in two ways. One way is we've taken an N-body simulation and populated it as well as we can with galaxies, then rediscover the clusters in that N-body simulation and find out how well we did. And the basic answer is that provided the cluster contains three galaxies, the completeness is 80 or 90%. The real false positive rate, meaning finding things that are not genuine clusters, is about 10%. But about half the things you find will be clusters slightly less massive than you think they are. So there's a Malmquist bias. Okay, but there's no problem really of finding things that are not actually bound objects, at least in these mimics of the N-body simulations. You also recover the cluster number function, so the number of clusters per unit richness. The input theoretical curve is this smooth curve. The histogram is what was actually in the N-body volume, and the points are what we recovered from the synthetic catalog using our method. In the real data, what you can do is you can compare it to X-ray data. So these are, as a function of X-ray flux and redshift, all of the ROSAT clusters we could find in the literature. In particular, these squares up here are the high flux, flux-limited redshift sample. And basically, we find all high flux clusters up to a redshift of about 15,000 kilometers per second, which is exactly the point where the typical high flux cluster would contain three galaxies. Okay. And so basically, these optically selected cluster samples are, you can think of as a volume-limited sample where you have a very sharp edge at the point that the cluster stops containing galaxies, which is a rather obvious point, whereas X-ray flux sort of degrades more slowly, and so you don't get a very sharp redshift edge where you do here. If you go to these fainter clusters, you can't really do completeness. Basically find about 80% of the ROSAT clusters below 15,000 kilometers per second. The origin of those differences are not entirely clear. Some of the completeness problems lie in the X-ray data, not in the optical data. So for example, there are a number of clusters we find which are not in ROSAT catalogs, which for example have X-ray AGN sitting in them. And so it's a completeness problem in the X-ray, not in the optical. Okay, so completeness problems go both ways. Okay, so now if you want to count the number of galaxies in a halo of a given mass, you have to somehow convert richness into mass, and you've sort of got three choices. You can get our velocity dispersion estimates, which are crude, because the typical cluster we find has only a handful of velocities. And so these open points are clusters with only 5 to 10 velocity measurements in them, and so the scatter is ridiculous. Okay, the solid points are if you have 10 or more. Here's the correlation with X-ray luminosity. Down in here, you start having problems with X-ray luminosities of groups, and so if you want, you should really ignore, count only the brighter X-ray clusters. There's a fairly good richness luminosity, and actually, since the gold standard of cluster things is temperature, the interesting thing is the scatter between X-ray temperature and richness is actually almost as tight as between X-ray temperature and luminosity. Okay, and so if you get the richness defined well, there's no reason optically selected quasars aren't essentially as good as X-ray selection. Here's the number function for the real data. The curve is the theoretical curve put in. You can see that the real data has slightly more rich clusters, and that actually seems to be a real effect, partly due from how the N-body simulation was populated with galaxies, and partly because there just seem to really be more rich clusters in the local universe than there were in the N-body simulation. And the final result, which will only matter much for aficionados of what this is that the richness, basically this number of L-star galaxies inside this overdensity contour, basically just scales linearly with the mass. The slope is about 10% off of unity. The absolute value is that there are about 30 richer than L-star galaxies in a 10 to the 15 solar mass cluster. That is significantly uncertain, and that arises entirely from the reasons Eleanor was just talking about. It's uncertainty in how to convert the observed correlations, which are quite good, into mass, which is still relatively uncertain. So the K-band light, all of these galaxies were selected in the infrared, basically corresponds to stellar mass. So having the richness scale as the mass means that the stellar mass is a relatively unbiased tracer of the mass distribution, which is not a major surprise. And what you should see is if you switch to a star formation weighted band, like either B band or the far infrared, and you go and do the same measurement, you should find that this slope is significantly flatter. Okay? But this, remember what I said, is if you picked a different definition of richness, you could easily get that flatter slope just from having chosen the wrong definition. And in fact, you can do a quick test if you take these same galaxies, and the problem is you have to have an all-sky sample to look at, which is still somewhat restricted. But if you take the same systems and you look at the overlaps with PSCZ in the mid-IR, or far-IR, or the Zwicky catalog in the blue, you do in fact find that the slope looks like it's flatter for either of those. A few more little bits of verification. One thing you can do is our velocity dispersions for an individual cluster aren't so good, but you can take clusters, richness bin by richness bin, and just stack the velocities and basically get a mean velocity dispersion profile. So here are the very richest clusters. Okay, they have an average velocity dispersion, bin velocity dispersion of about 900 kilometers per second. Those ratty scatter plots of the velocity dispersion say that the things in this bin should be somewhere between these two dashed lines. That's sort of the range of velocity dispersions expected for the bin. Go down a factor of three in richness, another factor of three in richness, another factor of three in richness. Okay, you're now down almost a factor of 100 in richness, and you're now down to things which have velocity dispersions of about 200 kilometers per second. You can also look at whether the distribution of galaxies on average around these cluster centers matches what you put in for the filter. So you play the same game. You take clusters in various bins of how rich or massive they are, and you look at the distribution of galaxies around them. And so that's these curves with the error bars. And again, it's the very richest clusters down to ones that are extremely poor. And the filter we're using is an NFW profile. And so the NFW profile we've effectively fit to these bins is these dashed lines. And you can see if we stack the galaxies, it essentially matches the filter profile quite closely. And the spacing of the actual cluster profiles in the richness bins more or less exactly matches the model. There are two little problems. One is the way we're doing this right now, clusters are always centered on a galaxy, and that produces a fake central peak. The other problem is NFW regions do not describe NFW models do not describe the entire region around a cluster. Right? They're surrounded by an infall region, and so eventually the distribution of galaxies has to tail off, okay, and basically will match the slope of the correlation function. In fact, this is essentially a version of the cluster to galaxy cross-correlation function. You can also look at the distribution of the galaxies in magnitude in each of these clusters as a function of richness. Again, richest to least rich. It gets a little ratty down here. Here's an L star galaxy. This is about a 10 L star galaxy. These are about 1/10 L star galaxies. It's about a factor of 100 in luminosity. The luminosity functions do not depend on the richness of the clusters. They are slightly different from the average luminosity function of all infrared of all K-band galaxies in the field. So this is the first pass of testing it. It's actually using a reduced sample. It's using only about 1 in 10 of the galaxies in this picture. There are about a million galaxies there. So the next step is we're trying to update this, how we generate the synthetic catalogs to more realistically test some of these problems. Because as I said, part of the problem in testing the algorithm right now is limitations in how you make an n-body catalog look like the universe. There's some things to do to the algorithm, which you don't need to know about. And the next step is then to redo the same thing with about four times as many galaxies, more comparisons to the X-ray data. And the other thing from the point of view of this question of the halo model is what you really want is the number of galaxies as a function of mass and luminosity. And as I said, the preliminary evidence is that at least for these massive clusters, it doesn't actually depend. That doesn't change much as you vary the mass. And then, of course, if you really understand the number functions and the conversion into the things related to mass, you can play the same sorts of sigma 8 and omega normalization games that Eleanor was talking about. I'll stop there. Seven percent of the K-band luminosity is in things more massive than 10 to the 14. We get down to about 10 to the 13. It's getting a little ratty there. I mean, it's just a question of the volume over which you can detect it. Right? You can only detect the 10 to the 13 groups over some tiny volume. But what do you mean by the distribution of N of M?
So the spread.
It's a Poisson as far as we could tell. That's a tricky test to do because you sort of have to make sure you pick things of the same mass, and you can't use the richness to do it because you're going to then look at the dispersion of that.
Chris, I was interested in the luminosity functions, especially for the big clusters, and they didn't seem to have the legendary brightest cluster galaxies. Is there something funny about the K-band for them?
Oh, no, but compared to the field, let's see. This is the field here, the blue curve. Oops. So the blue here is the field, and you can see the cluster.
Blue.
Blue, yeah. Right there. Oh.
I think the arrow is pointing.
Yeah, so this blue is the field. All right?
Blue? Oh, okay, I get it. So all right. So there are more high luminosity in the clusters than in the
right.
That's what that's showing.
Right.
Those are
the bright CDs, yeah.
And does that affect the way you do your sampling? It seems a little funny because if you have the same luminosity function everywhere, then it would be pretty easy to see
that's,
how this sampling that you didn't describe
might
work. But in the case where the clusters have a bias or different luminosity.
Yeah, the algorithm, I mean, this is one of the updates, because part of this problem is you have a bootstrap problem, right? So this current sample was derived assuming everyone had the same luminosity function. And then when you have the clusters, you can work out what the cluster luminosity function should have been, and then you can redo. That's one reason for wanting
to
redo it. And that's another thing that has to be fixed in the n-body simulations, because the n-body simulations didn't have differential field and cluster luminosity functions, because we didn't know what it is. So you have to do a bit of bootstrapping to but in practice, for the richness estimate, it matters less than you think, because if you take various Schechter parameters and then you sort of rescale them, they don't look that different when you push them around.
No, it's just these huge brushlands that never fit.
That's right.
Well, by the luminosity.
It's actually fairly well fit by simply taking the same luminosity function, making it half a magnitude brighter.
Have you looked at how in clusters trace large star structure compared to the dark matter using 2-point functions or fire structure?
We have not done 2 points on the clusters yet. You have to understand your completeness pretty well before. And also the paper was already 30 pages long. That seemed adequate for now. But yeah, it's on the list too.